Well, good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. This morning we have two booksellers from two bookstores joining us with books that we should pay attention to. We call it Book Picks on the Roundtable. We've been doing this since we began this show over 2.5 decades ago. And this morning we welcome just great, absolutely fantastic booksellers. Giovanni Boven is with us, not only a bookseller, but the owner of the Book Loft in Great Barrington. And Giovanni, always a pleasure. Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. Always a pleasure.
Thank you very much for being here. And Lily Bartels joins us from Open Door Bookstore and Gift Gallery in Schenectady, New York. Good morning, Lily.
Hi, Joe.
Very nice to have you here. Okay. Lily, let us begin with you.
I am going to start with a new novel by Chris Bohjalian. It is an historical novel that is based on the true story about a Union soldier left for dead in the Shenandoah Valley in Virginia, who is found and nursed back to health by a Confederate soldier's wife. One thing about Bohjalian's storytelling is he's very skilled at writing from the perspective of a wide variety of characters, which he does beautifully in this very compelling, propulsive story about this Union captain, Jonathan Weybridge of the Vermont Brigade, who loses a leg in combat, and then Libby Stedman, who's the wife of a Confederate soldier who has been captured and is being held in a Union jail. When she finds Jonathan, she knows he's her enemy, but she also recognizes him as a human being, and so she's faced with a terrible decision between leaving Jonathan alone to die or risking treason in order to rescue him. She chooses the latter, and she nurses him back to health. And as she does so, she has long conversations with him. They become close, and she starts to consider a plan whereby she could secretly take Jonathan back over Union lines and try to negotiate for release of information about her husband. You know, all I can say is Bohjalian keeps you completely locked in from the beginning of this story to the end. It's very immersive. It's very propulsive. And it's compassionate. You know, it's a story about these beautifully drawn characters who find themselves in highly complicated circumstances. And of course, all of this is set against the unending background of the brutality of war. I actually found this unputdownable and also unforgettable. I personally feel it's Bohjalian's best.
Well, he's one of my favorite authors and absolutely terrific and a great guy. And the new book is The Jackal's Mistress by Chris Bohjalian, and I look forward to reading that. All right, Giovanni.
Okay, so right now we've got the new book by Erica T. Worth, who wrote Pale Horse. This is Haunting of Room 904. And this is about Olivia Besente, who is Denver's most sought-after and most likely reluctant spirit medium. She was never supposed to see the dead. That was always her sister's gift, her sister Naish. But Naish died under some very strange circumstances. And Olivia hears from the Brown Palace, which is one of Denver's most landmark hotels, and finds out that her sister was not the only victim of this room, this curse. Every few years, a woman is found dead in room 904, despite whatever room she checked into. And so she dives into the history of the hotel, and it actually ties into the land's controversial history with its indigenous people. So she works on trying to break the curse and keep other women from showing up dead in this room.
Wow, that's a lot going on.
Yep.
Very cool. Haunting of Room 904 by Erica Worth. Okay. Lily, you're up.
I am going to move on with nonfiction, and this is called Waiting on the Moon by Peter Wolfe. The subtitle is Artists, Poets, Drifters, Grifters, and Goddesses. We probably all know that Peter Wolfe was the lead singer and frontman for the Jay Giles Band from about the mid-60s to the early 80s, and then later went on to a successful career, a successful solo career that's still going strong. He has a new album and a new tour coming out this year. Waiting on the Moon is a memoir, yes, but I think it's more aptly described as a series of vignettes about the many notable people Peter has interacted with over the long, like 60-year-long course of his musical career. He was born in the Bronx. He was the child of artistically forward-thinking parents who influenced his love of music and also his desire to become a painter. And we all know he took a different path, but he did go to Boston to study art. Guess who his roommate was? David Lynch.
Well, there you go.
R.I.P. After he joined the Jay Giles Band and became a famous person himself, he encountered, in a kind of almost funny, Zelig-like way, an unbelievable and diverse number of other famous people, other creatives, artists, musicians, writers, actors. And he shares these wonderful, revealing stories about his experiences with these greats. Here's an abbreviated list. Muddy Waters, Tennessee Williams, Alfred Hitchcock, Mick Jagger, Eleanor Roosevelt, Julia Child, John Lennon, Aretha, and many others. He talks about his marriage to Faye Dunaway. It's a very balanced recounting of that. He is a captivating writer, and if you've ever seen him in concert, in a small venue, he's a tremendously gifted storyteller, and that certainly comes through in these accounts. And he also brings a great deal of humor, but also poignancy to the writing, and it's very vivid and it's a breeze to read because it's so freaking fascinating.
Excellent. It is Waiting on the Moon by Peter Wolfe. Okay. Giovanni.
I've got another indigenous horror for you called Buffalo Hunter Hunter by Stephen Graham Jones, and that came out last Tuesday. This is told from a diary found in an old church. This young woman finds out that her great-grandfather was meeting with a Blackfoot named Goodstab, who, in a series of what he terms confessions, tells his story about how he essentially went through this transformation over the course of a very brief time. And it relates to the massacre of 217 Blackfeet in their sick camp during the winter in the Rocky Mountains. Mm. And this is a vampire story, and it's a different take on the vampire story, as Goodstab and creatures like him take on the physical traits of who or what they feed on. So when he first meets the thing that turns him, he thinks it's a giant angry cat because that's what it looks like to him.
Sure.
It's a very interesting novel telling the story of the area's history, in a sense, and also Goodstab's kind of journey through his transformation and his interactions with white people. And this pastor's kind of reluctance to believe this story, but as things go forward, he starts to realize, yeah, this guy's telling the truth, and this is terrifying.
Wow. Buffalo Hunter Hunter, right?
Yep.
Wore that word twice, by Stephen Graham Jones. All right. More nonfiction with Lily, go ahead.
Actually, I'm going to bump a novel into that space.
All right.
Because we at the Open Door are very excited about this new book. It's a novel called Paradise Logic by Sophie Kemp. Very hard to describe, very unique. Basically, you have a character called 23-year-old Reality Khan. She has a single driving goal, and that's to find a boyfriend for whom she'll be, quote, the greatest girlfriend of all time, end quote. And this is Sophie Kemp's outrageous debut novel, Paradise Logic. It is alternately absurd, surreal, raunchy. The timid need not apply for this book. Hilarious and dark, sometimes all at the same time. And it's a story that takes us along with reality on her somewhat naive, somewhat desperate, and very strange and twisted quest through the wilds of Brooklyn. Kemp also takes on our obsession with authentic true love, asking whether that's even possible in a patriarchal world. Both the book and Reality Khan are completely unhinged in a way that can feel, I've heard it described as like a fever dream, like an acid trip. But Kemp's brilliant mind and her wholly original voice and vision are mesmerizing. So my suggestion is that you just surrender and go with it. And the reason why we're so excited for Sophie is that she is the daughter of our children's book buyer, Kathleen Kemp, and we will be hosting Sophie as part of her book tour at the Open Door this Saturday, March 9th from 12:30 to 2. She will be signing books. Stop in and meet her. She's a fabulous person, and we just could not be more excited about this book that's getting a lot of critical acclaim as, you know, announcing her as a great new young writer on the scene.
Sophie Kemp's Paradise Logic, in the event is this Saturday, the 29th.
Correct.
All right. Giovanni.
Okay, so we've got another horror. this is Alex Grecian's Rose of Jericho, which is the follow-up to his previous title, Red Rose. In the previous title, we meet Rose and her companions. But this takes us a little further, we go to Ascension, Massachusetts, a New England town, where Rose's cousin is wasting away, only to make a miraculous recovery. Her son is run over by a milk cart, and he just walks away from it. And it's all this happens. People keep getting into accidents that should kill them, but the dead won't stay dead.
Damn it.
We kind of realize early on that Moses, who was a character from the previous novel, just lost his wife. He meets death on the path, shoots death, and now the dead won't stay dead. So he's trying to make his way to Rose, to Ascension, and Sadie to kind of fix his mistake. So that's kind of, it's a real interesting novel. Following the characters from the previous novel and just kind of exploring what happens when the dead won't stay dead.
All right. It's Rose of Jericho. Lily.
Now I'll switch to nonfiction, and this is a terrific one. It's Taking Manhattan by Russell Shorto, the extraordinary events that created New York and shaped America. If you've read Russell Shorto's magnificent earlier book, The Island at the Center of the World, you will know that there is no one that writes about the origins of New York City more brilliantly than he does. The earlier book told the story of the Dutch-controlled New Amsterdam before it became New York. And in Taking Manhattan, he gives us a full account of what happened when the English showed up in 1664, when ships sent by Charles II and his brother, the Duke of York, appeared offshore. Charles and his brother, they wanted New Amsterdam, and they were prepared to take it by force from the Dutch. But when the officer that was in charge of this flotilla of ships met Peter Stuyvesant, who was the leader of New Amsterdam, what ensued were these very creative negotiations that ultimately would blend the multi-ethnic and commercial society that the Dutch had created with the power of the English Empire. And that blending created ultimately the arguably the first modern city. I want to point out, though, that Shorto is very clear that the making of this city is also the story of the brutal treatment of the Native Americans who were thrown off and displaced from their own land in 1626, and also of the roots of American slavery, because New York City was a slaving port. And he mentions that the first ship of captured Africans that to come into New York Harbor was a ship full of children. And that's just enough to make you cry. But the other point that Russell Shorto makes, and very astutely, is that the paradox of New York's beginnings, which is that on the one hand you had this almost almost bottomless opportunity, but that was also coupled with subjugation and displacement. Yeah. And he points out that that dichotomy is still reflected in everything that America achieves and all of its failures right up to and including the present. So this is a story of intrigue and fascinating subplots and, you know, a diverse cast of characters that come to life on the page. And as always, Russell Shorto's research is impeccable, and his writing is just amazing and delicious and mesmerizing.
Russell Shorto is the author of the new book, Taking Manhattan, and is an upcoming guest on our book show. We've already recorded it, and he was magnificent, and that
great.
Will broadcast soon on the book show. Giovanni, go ahead.
So the next ones, they're from our bookseller, Mary, who is very into the classics. And one of her staff picks is Jules Verne's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Okay.
And she says, this stands the test of time as an epic classic. When Professor Pierre Aronnax receives word that mysterious monster is randomly attacking ships, he, his colleague Conseil, and Ned Land, the ship's harpooner, suddenly find themselves aboard the Nautilus with Captain Nemo. And he and his crew take the three on a journey across the world, showing them all the wonders of the deep blue sea. But this epic journey comes the discovery of man's dark side as well.
Always good. 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Jules Verne, of course. And you might as well do the other two classics together. That makes the most sense, I think.
Sure. We are going to do Victor Hugo's Hunchback of Notre Dame. And it is very different from the film adaptations. I read this myself. It's still an iconic work. It's a literary masterpiece. It goes very deep into the architecture and layout of Paris. But it follows Quasimodo, the hunchback who rings the bells of Notre Dame Cathedral every day. And because of that, he's partially deaf, but he's also extremely intelligent, which you wouldn't... It's a different take on kind of someone who appears as he does. But he falls in love with the beautiful Esmeralda. And interestingly, their story also ties in very uniquely as well. Hunchback of Notre Dame by Victor Hugo, a classic. Definitely worth a read. Definitely worth getting into.
And a really big book.
It is.
Yeah, it's a really, really big book. Okay, Lily.
I'm going to finish with a novel by Eowyn Ivey named Black Woods, Blue Sky. Eowyn Ivey is best known for the hugely popular book that she wrote some years ago called The Snow Child, which was set in Alaska. And Backwoods Blue Sky is once again set in the Alaskan landscape. And Ivey actually lives in Alaska. In this story, the landscape practically becomes its own character. It's beautiful, it's alluring, but it is potentially deadly. And the main character is a young mother named Birdie who's barely keeping it together. She's waitressing at a roadside lodge, and she also lives in one of the cabins there while trying to take care of her six-year-old daughter, Emmeline. She loves her daughter, but she longs for a better life for both of them, and she also possesses a real intense desire for a freer and maybe even wilder life. Then you have Arthur, who is a local recluse living in the mountains, who occasionally visits the lodge, oddly enough, only at the change of seasons, and that will factor into the later story. He barely speaks to anyone, but one day he finds Emmeline wandering in the woods. She's become lost. So he takes her and brings her back to the lodge, back to Birdie. And Birdie finds herself intensely drawn to Arthur and to what she thinks is the freedom that he represents. And eventually she decides to take Birdie and move in with Arthur into his very isolated, somewhat shabby cabin in the mountains. Being with Arthur, just the three of them living this stripped-down life, exploring the beauty of the mountains, it's like a fairy tale come true for Birdie. You know, they're far from roads, they're far from electricity, they're far from human contact, for that matter. But Birdie believes that she is prepared for this sort of life. However, as we know, a fairy tale can turn dark, and this one does, when Birdie, along with us, discovers that Arthur is something much more mysterious and dangerous, and let me just tell you right now, you will not guess why, than she could have imagined. I would describe this book as a dark fairy tale with life and death stakes that incorporates some magical realism and becomes increasingly suspenseful and fraught with every page that you turn. It's equally about the love between a mother and a daughter, and it's also about what happens when you decide to surrender yourself to the natural world completely, what you may gain and what you may lose. It's very, very, wow, it's really a deep dive into that subject, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Black Woods, Blue Sky, and a final book?
We will finish up with Dinotopia by James Gurney, and this was something that even I grew up with.
Yeah.
It is a beautifully illustrated book series that's suitable both for children and adults alike. Arthur Dennison and his son Will suddenly find themselves shipwrecked on an island, and they are stunned beyond words to find that both humans and dinosaurs coexist in harmony. It is beautifully written, gorgeously illustrated. It is just a beautiful classic children's book that can be for, you know, the parents will love it as well. Dinotopia.
James Gurney is an amazing artist and an amazing author, and they re-released a book that he did with Thomas Kincaid on sketching, which is just out, and that is incredible. He's so, so good, and we're thrilled. We had him on recently. He's just always great. Anything else anybody else wants to mention in our final 45 seconds? Yes.
Yes, one more book. A great new novel called Deep Cuts by Holly Brinkley. Brickley, rather. The story of two. I love a book set around the music world. So this focuses on two people pulled apart by the same force that draws them together, which is music. It starts in the early 2000s in a bar in Berkeley, where one evening a woman named Percy Marks sits at the bar, discovers that the guy sitting beside her is a songwriter. Percy has no musical talent herself, but she is passionate about music, and she has lots of big opinions that she's going to share with you. Joe finds himself fascinated by how she analyzed songs. He asks her for her feedback on one of his songs. That ultimately sparks a partnership that will span years in an intense and complicated working relationship that also teeters on the brink of will they, won't they.
I got to cut you off. I'm sorry.
No, no.
We're out of time. But the name of the book, Deep Cuts by Holly Brickley. You can find out more information by going to our website, wamc.org/roundtable, or bookloft.com and opendoor-bookstore.com. Thanks to you both. I appreciate it for you being here. We'll be back right after this.